The new Terminator movie is going to suck, and you're listening to the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, once again to yet another thrilling, fun, superior, exciting, amazing, all new, all exciting, extremely dangerous, rated R, any other adjectives I can think of episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. I need to breathe for 3 seconds. Okay. I am your host, Ben, a.k.a. the Marvelous Iggy, your host of this here band of misfits. Joining me, as always, Ted Kord himself, Brian Powers. Brian, welcome back.
Fucking Michael Chiklis and Chris Evans were great in that movie. The Roger Corman movie sucked. And also, yeah. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. season 1 is coming to Netflix. There you go. Moving
joining
on.
Us from, joining us from Oklahoma, Stillwater, Oklahoma, Jonathan selling propane and propane accessories.
Yeah, my fellow Burger King place, yes. And I want to say, fuck the Texas Longhorns. Okay.
The funny thing is, Hank Hill's from Texas. That's the funny thing.
Yep.
It's probably heresy for me saying that. And of course, the man who lives in the shadows, Shadow Man, Taser. Welcome to the show.
I just want to say big ups to Anonymous for taking over the Ku Klux Klan's Twitter feed account.
Are you kidding me?
Ferguson. Yes.
When did that happen? Oh wow.
Was it yesterday or today?
Oh,
that's
wow.
Just fucking awesome. You know, as breaches of security goes, I have no problem with that. None whatsoever.
Well, to the Klan, they're asking for it.
All right. Keeping it in the hood.
I figured the Klan is still a thing, apparently. All right. Anyway.
And they also outed a guy who was a police officer.
Oh.
One of their members was a police officer. They outed him as a member of the Ku Klux Klan.
Well,
I have no problem with that either.
Nope. All right. Well, this is not political podcast. We are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. We are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel. So be warned. We're going to talk about everything Marvel. No distinguished competition stuff related here. No siree, Bob.
What about Archie?
All diversity.
Okay. Okay. Whatever. Fine.
Lego Batman.
Lego Batman's great.
What about Indivisible? Invincible.
Invincible?
Yeah, Invincible.
That's Image.
Invincible's Image. Great. Invincible's really fun.
Read Walking Dead.
Walking Dead?
Walking Dead's great. I don't read the book anymore because I kind of got bored with it, but it's good. It was good when I read it.
Okay. Oh, Usagi Yojimbo and Gold Digger.
Okay, you know what? We're all forgetting the best character of them all. Spawn.
All right, I won't argue that.
Okay, Spawn's awesome. Long live Spawn. His book is still being published. I don't know why I'm shocked about that.
Anyway, well, it's being published when Todd McFarlane could afford to give a crap.
But, it's been out monthly for a while, actually. It's been monthly.
Hey,
he's just not
Savage dead. Dragon, dude. Savage Dragon.
Okay.
Hey, Spawn is one of the coolest zombie corpses ever to have superpowers.
Yes. Plus, McFarlane syndrome, he had the most badass of all capes.
I'll agree with that.
Even better than Batman's. All right, well, that's not Marvel related. But so we're going to start off with some fun news since we're on a jolly mood tonight because it's the holiday season. Brian, apparently there was going to be a movie about a certain someone, but then they canceled it. Spill us the details.
Jeez. Okay, so there was a rumor floating around not even a week ago that Sony was putting in production a Spider-Man-less Aunt May solo flick.
Yes!
There wasn't much in the way of what the story was going to be about. However, it was said it would focus on a young Aunt May, a la Marvel's Trouble series with comics, which were just awful.
Awesome. Come on, smoking hot Aunt May? Who doesn't want to see that?
Okay, that book series was terrible. Never mind, that's not even the point. So, they were going to make a movie out of young Aunt May. So, back when she was spry. They.
You telling me Sally Fields still isn't? You telling me Sally Fields isn't spry now?
I'll make that nun fly. I'll tell you that. Thank you. Thank you, Taser. Thank you, John, for your growth. So.
Actually, I do it right now.
Gilfs for the update. They, Jesus Christ. They reached out to Sony for a comment on it. Sony's representative went on to say that it is, quote, a silly rumor with no validity whatsoever, end quote. That rumor was updated as of the 11th of November, so it appears we won't be seeing any Aunt May movie forthcoming. However, as someone said, they filed this rumor under so absurd it'll probably turn out to be true. Maybe not now, but at some point down the road.
Boom!
So I guess the question becomes, who would we have picked to play Smokin' Hot Aunt May? That's really the question.
Jennifer Lawrence, because she's doing everything, apparently.
Oh, Jesus. I think Smokin' Hot May the same way again. Seriously, if they ever did that movie, I wouldn't be able to look it up.
No, that's the point. That's the one why I don't want to see it, because it's like I said this off recording, but it's like seeing, like, you know, your grandparents were young, or your aunt or your parents. You know they were young at one point. They know you did the same shit you're doing, especially when you're 20. You're just like, my parents did this, or depending on how lives they lived, more likely they did. And then you don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. I don't need to see that. I don't want to. Aunt May's the wholesome baking wheat cakes for Peter and
when she was old.
Yeah, exactly.
When she was younger.
I don't want to see her. I don't. I know she had a life.
I want to see her saucy days.
That's because you're old.
Give it up, you pot-bellied stallion.
Why is she southern in your version?
I don't know, because I like it southern. I don't know.
He likes it.
She's from Brooklyn, probably. She's probably from Brooklyn.
It's either that or I hear her go, "Oh, Peter, I'm having a 100th heart attack this week."
Oh, God. Look, it's a
dumb.
And
you know who I would get to play her? I would ignore all conventions and have her played by Sharon Leo.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, I'll send you a picture.
I like how we're not even a few minutes in and we're already so derailed from
what
the
point is.
That's right.
The point of this is that even if it's not true, and we know they're doing that stupid Sinister Six movie without a Spider-Man, and we know that Amazing Spider-Man 3 has been pushed back with an unconfirmed 2018 date, that if they even entertain this idea, that their idea of this Spider movie universe is so, like, just stretching where they can't stretch. They're not Mr. Fantastic. They can't do it. And as interesting as it could be, Aunt May movie, I don't want to see it. I don't want to see it. I don't care what kind of hot actress she get. I can go watch porn if I just want to look at some young woman's sexual adventures if I really wanted to.
That's true, too. And Aunt May porno.
Who would already want that out there? I guarantee you.
Everybody wouldn't watch that, you sick.
Not true. Come on now. There's some guilt stuff out there.
I'm pretty sure there's something out there. There has to be. Maybe not like on YouTube.
You would make Aunt May a sister?
Yes.
Might as well.
Well, think about it. If Felicia Masters can be black, why not Aunt May?
Because
you know what?
Continuity.
Just the making someone black thing's outdated. We should make someone Latina or Asian.
I'll take the Asian. Storm. Latina. There you go. Already been done.
Well, then Asian then. Fine.
When did that happen?
Jessica Alba.
Oh, she doesn't count. They whitewashed her enough that she could have
had her. Not, that doesn't movie count. Brian Powers.
Sharon Leo. Ooh.
They whitewashed her enough that they could have just. She could have passed
she's
her a Barbie
still
doll
Latina. That is okay. Okay, fine. Because it's always out there. Okay.
Opinion.
Brian's logic. By that means Brian's logic.
You should
Zoe Saldana
really
is
like,
not Latina
quote
because they brainwashed her by being a green alien who's the daughter of Thanos by Brian's logic. There you go. There you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Hey,
you are
like
not your race if you play an actor, if you play a role.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. What about Zoe Saldana? She played Gamora. You know,
sure, why not? Fine, fuck it. Can we move on? Or, John, you have anything to say to this? Because there's not much to say.
Okay, Sharon Lee was.
I was too busy fapping to the picture of the taser head.
God damn it.
Sharon Lee. Yeah. That's about how.
See, that's
how
just
my
more shit I don't need to know about for a whole bunch of other reasons.
Here's
other
another
than
one. I like her.
Oh, my God. this whole podcast is just going to turn into one big circle jerk, isn't it?
No. Unless you want to pull yours.
Quick, get A-Train on the
line. Really? That's yours? No, you go first.
Hold on, I'm going to text A-Train right now. Hey, we're talking about penises. You want to come
We're going to get a circle jerk going. You want in?
Hey, somebody ring up Johnny V.
Jesus.
Seamus, no, where are you?
We were talking about something, I think. I can't remember for the life.
All right, can we move on?
So shitty, that's why we're going
on. Can we move on? All right, let us know what you think of this stupid bullshit rumor. Do you think that Sony's in trouble with the Spider-Man license and that the mouse will ultimately come and say, oh, mine! All right, so we got some news that a new actor has been casted for Captain America Civil War. Brian, dish it out.
Okay, added to the roster in an unannounced character role has been German actor Daniel Brühl.
Oh, he's German, yeah?
Oh, he's German,
yeah? He's from Deutschland?
Oh, he played Friedrich Zola from Inglourious Bastards, yeah? Played a Nazi.
The Himmel!
That's Okay,
is that all
and
we got?
I think he played another ethnic role in The Fifth Estate, that Julian Assange movie that happened a while back.
Okay, I can tell you who he is. I can already tell. He's German, yeah?
Yes, he's German.
He's from the motherland.
He's played a Nazi before.
He's Nightcrawler.
No, he's not. He's not Kurt. He can't be Kurt.
He said German, so I just thought.
Yeah, okay. He's going to be Baron Zemo. I guarantee. Is it really racist to put him as the Baron? Sure.
Well, to be fair, he's kind of been typecast as the German guy.
Yeah, so I'm going to slide all of my chips, my fictional chips that I don't have, onto Baron Baron Zemo the second, because he won't be the first guy.
Baron Heinrich von Zemo.
Yes, so it'll be
Baron Zemo, the alcoholic drink.
Yeah, we won't the Thunderbolts one, not the new guy. Maybe they'll do a Thunderbolts movie. But
that would be something.
I'm surprised that was maybe after Avengers Infinity War when people want to hear about the villains. But I'm sliding my chips that he will be Baron Zemo, since I don't think we're gonna get Red Skull for Cap Civil War, even though that would be cool. I think that as a substitute, they will go with Baron Zemo, who is still badass, and I hope they give him the ridiculous matte purple mask. It's not ridiculous, but it just looks kind of stupid.
Including the whole glued to the face thing?
Yes.
Okay.
I want that. Right. And like I want. So I think Baron Heinrich von Zemo. Why am I adding von? Baron Zemo will be the villain. I'm calling it right now. I could be wrong, but fuck it. Taser, who do you think he is going to play? Or who do you want him to play? Either or.
You know, the Machine Smith.
Oh, okay.
Ooh, yeah, that sounds like a good one.
Although I would say I'm inclined to keep him. Actually, considering his age, I would make him the junior.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah, I'd make him the junior.
Huh.
And he's the one who really has to beef against Captain America.
Yeah.
I would do that. Yes. Baron Heinrich Zemo.
Zemo's such an underrated villain. Like, I feel like he doesn't get as much love as he should because of Red Skull.
The first or the second?
Second.
Really? Because he had some length.
In terms of, like, the larger piece of everything, like, he doesn't get looked as nearly enough as much as I think he should. That's all I'm saying. I love Zemo. I love Baron Zemo.
No, I dig that. But you look at it this way. He had that long stint. He had that long stint with the Masters of Evil. Now that's something that I want to see Marvel bring to the Marvel. You know, the MCU.
With the Black Knight and everything.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. He had a long stint with them. Had his back broken. Was taken out of commission for a while. Also, mind twisted that character Blackout. I don't know if you guys remember him. Then he came back doing the whole Citizen V thing and, you know, the Thunderbolts. And he had a good long stretch with that, you know, turning good at one point and then getting his hands on, what were those stone things that sent him up against Genus Vell?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
That when Genus had the clone of Captain Marvel, he had the Nega Bands and he was doing the whole cosmic omnipotence thing. Yeah. And, Zemo Jr., he ended up getting these two Power Stones, and it put him on equal terms. And we're talking, holy gee whiz, what the fuck kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
And they both had some kind of really awesome fight that I think ultimately kind of took Genus Vell and put him somewhere where he won't be back for a while.
Well, hopefully one day. I do like his costume. All right.
Fair enough.
So you think it's better in Zemo as well, the second?
I like that, yeah.
Or the machinist,
like
or machine smith. Not the machinist. The
machine smith wouldn't be bad.
No, wouldn't be unexpected.
Yes.
Brian, do you think, are you going to go 3-for-3 with the Baron?
I'm going to bet on the dark horse here. Not racist, just saying.
I thought you were going to mention the publisher, but like, can we mention their name?
No. Actually, you know what? I'm gonna try to ignore the fact that he's German, and I'm gonna take an outside bet and say he shows up as Alexander Lukin.
The Russian character behind the death of Captain America.
And the modern incarnation of the Red Skull, to a lesser extent.
His body, at least. Well,
yeah.
Oh,
his mind.
From the Death and Rebirth. Oh God, that was awful. I'm sorry. Yeah.
He literally tried to kill America through rising bank mortgages and prices. It was thrilling shit.
Hey man, all I know is that Marvel, they love their high rolling corporate playboys, and Alexander Lukin fits that bill perfectly.
That's why I don't want him to be it. Kind
also,
of.
Also, it would be a way to fit the Iron Red Skull already back into the Cap mythos, and hopefully come up with something different. But Baron Zemo is probably the more obvious bet, and in all honesty, it'll probably be how Rule winds up being intro. But I would like to see Alexander Lukin make the role.
Okay, that's different. I forgot.
Yeah, but that ends up making him a sacrifice, right?
Well, he becomes Red Skull, yeah, in a way.
Well, he would end up being sacrificed, and then I guess the Red Skull comes back, you know, taking over his body.
Well, the way it happened in the comics was that Red Skull used the Cosmic Cube to transplant his consciousness into Alexander Lukin's mind,
they
cohabitated
like,
his
yeah,
brain.
They were like Firestorm for a bit.
Right.
Cool science shit.
Hmm.
Okay, that'd be cool. I mean, I personally would rather see Zemo, but I respect that choice. I don't respect you, John.
Hey.
Ouch. Oh, well, he's a Boston cream pie. What do you expect? Let's go 4-for-4. I think it's going to be Baron Zemo. He's just
three out
obvious.
Four. Still good for baseball
terms. Yeah. But you know, I think that would probably be the best. I couldn't really honestly think of anything else unless they tried to make him a newer version of the Red Skull. You know. But other than that, I'd like to see Zemo, you know, sword and mask and all, just see how it goes.
I hope he has a sword too. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
So, cool.
There we go. You know what would be an interesting dark horse for him? Sorry for cutting you off, John.
That's all right.
Vermin.
Oh, that'd be interesting.
Who?
The rat thing.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
Vermin.
Yeah, he might be tied into Spidey.
Yeah, I'd much rather see him in the movie they will never do, Kraven's Last Hunt, because they will never do it. I'll never do that movie faithfully.
No. I wouldn't buy him as Kraven, though.
No, not Kraven. I'm just saying in the movie, like, he would be Vermin, but...
Okay.
I'm just saying as a general... But whatever. Baron Zemo, it is the general hive mind agrees, except for Brian, who wants to be the special guy.
One of us.
I'm not trying to be special. I'm trying to just be outside the box. It's too obvious.
Yeah, but to me, when you say Lukin, it's like... I mean, it kind of fits with the whole, you know... Tony Stark's going to be in it, and, you know...
You know what you're doing? You're putting Brule in the German box, okay? You're putting him in the box, and you're leaving
So you move him to Mother Russia? Is that your solution?
Yeah, why not?
Make
him
one dickish European guy to another. Lovely.
Technically, Russia's also in Asia, so...
Not the part where Lukin's from.
Hey, it's Russia.
He's
it
not
counts.
From, is, he's not from Siberia.
Russia counts.
Whatever. He's not. He's technically Asian on a.
It's Russia.
Level.
It counts.
You're pulling strings.
He's Chinese.
You're strong.
Unlike Jessica Alba, this one counts. Okay.
You're strong. It barely counts. You're strong. Manning. All right. Whatever. Let us know who you think Brule will be playing Captain America.
Daniel Brule.
Brule. Who do you think it will be? Who do you want it to be? And that's or not. Let us know in the comments. Facebook, tweet at us. Yada yada. So we got some legal news fitting for the episode title. Brian, apparently we finally got a little bit of information on the whole controversial Disney Fox Marvel Fantastic Four brouhaha.
Yeah.
It's brouhaha.
As you may know, the Fantastic Four is being canceled by Marvel Comics. Allegedly because of Fox Studios' ownership of the Fantastic Four movie rights. They don't want to promote something they don't get a cut off. So this is kind of causing uproar, people saying, like, well, you know, just because they own these rights doesn't mean we don't want to read our comic. But that hasn't been much help. Regardless, I don't really know how to report this, but in basically a roundtable interview with Fox CEO Jim Giannopoulos and Disney's Alan Fine, a reporter from THR, I don't know what that's, Hollywood Reporter, excuse me, they went and they asked him basically about the cancellation of the Marvel Fantastic Four comic. And apparently neither of them knew anything about it. At least that's what I'm gleaning from this. When they reported that the comic has been canceled for now, Giannopoulos, who's the Fox CEO, responds with, "They did?" And then...
goodness me. I had no idea.
And not only that, but apparently Alan Fine at Marvel didn't know Jack either, because he claims he didn't know how the decision came about. Giannopoulos does say the comics aren't a huge seller. Fantastic Four is a very established group of characters. Film is awesome. I don't know how to play into their decision. The book wasn't selling as well as others.
Which is true. I mean, the sales went down a lot after Hickman left. That's not a lie. And the Fantastic Four in recent years hasn't, you know, outside of sporadic moments, for the most part, it's true. It's not a top 10 book. It's only been
James Robinson's a polarizing guy. No. He can have great
and it wasn't a top 40 book when the movies were out either.
Exactly. So,
yeah.
He's not wrong about that.
Yeah. Robinson's polarizing, to say the least. But Hollywood Reporter followed up with asking if it matters from your perspective. Giannopoulos says it doesn't. Fine went on to say that it was a full independent decision. I didn't even know about it. I mean, honestly, we don't. It's been stated that Marvel Comics CEO Ike Perlmutter made the call to cancel the Fantastic Four comic. So if that's the case, that's why Fine would likely have been kept out of the loop, as well as Giannopoulos over at Fox Studios.
So if we are to believe this, which I have no reason to not to believe,
It's not incendiary enough to be planted or whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, it doesn't surprise me, you know. It's surprise that they're going to cancel Fantastic Four. What I think they're going to do is, while they're canceling it now, they're going to bring it back again with something else, and they're going to call it something else. It'll be like the Fantastic Four. That's what they're going to do.
You know what I don't get, though? They're canceling this because they don't make any money off of it, or they don't benefit however which way they want to regard it. But doesn't that same judgment kind of fall in line with the Spider-Man and the X-Men books?
They'll sell, though. Like, even their lesser titles sell more than Fantastic Four.
Well, no, I'm not disagreeing with that.
And Spider-Man... And X-Men more so, but Spider-Man usually has like several books sometimes, and then X-Men has a family, so it's a lot easier to cancel Fantastic Four, which is one title, at least now it is. It wasn't for a while, and then Spider-Man will have like the big thing, and then it'll do like other things based around Spider-Man.
You're right.
Plus,
but,
it's Spider-Man. You can't as much as we all love the FF. Spider-Man is what people think of Marvel first. So a lot of people still do.
I would say Wolverine, but fair enough.
Yeah.
Just same difference.
Kid mascot Spider-Man. You know, kids want to be Spider-Man. More kids want to be Spider-Man than Wolverine, I think, as a lead. That'll be an interesting poll. But
yes, it would.
but I think it's easier to cancel FF because they're the least popular. They're the lowest selling book out of the three that you mentioned. And they don't have a lot of books to follow around. You know, it's just one.
That's true. But see, when you look at, like, take a look at Cap for not that long ago, or even Thor. You know, those books weren't, like, top 20 or top
40. That was before the movies came around, though.
Even still, I don't think Cap's in the top 20, at least. You know, I mean, his movies have done well, but Thor's movie barely sold. The second one did a lot better, you know. But again, by that same regard, you know, I think Thor's movie did basically what the FF movie did. The first one did, and you know, the second one did better. Whereas with Thor, the first one did, and the second one did much better. You know what I'm saying? It's just that there's been years between the two.
Yeah.
So. I don't know. It just seems kind of weird that they would just kind of single this one out and, you know, cancel.
Maybe
you know,
they, the somebody book. Knows the direction of how horrible this movie is going to be. It's possible.
Or they could cancel the book to try to get people to kind of notice that it's gone
which,
and then climb
which isn't the first
and
time
re-release it. And, you know?
That's not the first time it's happened. Yeah, they did that with the Death of Superman. I mean, not Marvel, but DC with the Death of Superman. Nobody really cared about Superman at that point. And then you hear, we're going to kill him. And then boom. I mean, it won't sell millions of copies when they remake FF, obviously. But like, it could be that same tactic. That's also a complete possibility, which I think that's what they're going to do.
Yeah, and they did do that with Cap when they killed him off. Even though they kept the book in production,
yeah.
Steve Rogers was gone for, like, what, 2 years?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it was something. So I guess that's fair. But I just look at it like this. I hope that, yeah, they may cancel FF, but I hope the characters show up in other stuff.
I hope
you know,
so,
because
too. Yeah.
It just feels wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just feels wrong without them. Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll find out by spring of next year. Brian, thoughts?
Is Fantastic Four still canceled?
I'm guessing you don't give a shit, huh?
Is it still canceled?
I think it's still canceled.
Is that shit movie still being made?
Unfortunately,
yep. Mm-hmm. And no, I don't give a single fuck, because all this does is just say that nobody at Fox knew about it, which would make sense. Why would Marvel tell Fox they were canceling the book that carried their flagship movie or whatever? And Alan Fine didn't know, and Alan Fine's he's just a guy. I mean, he works for Marvel, but apparently it was still over his head. So, I don't really know. I guess this just means that it's not going to be reversed anytime soon, this decision. I mean, obviously, people were left out of the decision-making process. This guy, the CEO, just said, hey, cancel it. And like that, it was canceled, you know? So I am upset, but I would like to see the book come back, ideally in the hands of a different creative team. And I would like to see it rise to the status it once held when Hickman was writing the book. So...
All right.
That's
John.
That's all I got.
I'm not happy with them canceling it at all, simply because, you know, it's the flagship title. I mean, you know, granted, it hasn't been selling well, and, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But, you know, still, I think it's mainly Marvel giving the middle finger to Fox for doing the shit reboot they're going to be doing. Which I'm going to say like this: Twilight, still a better movie than the FF reboot, and rage building. We'll leave it at that. I don't want to turn into a panda knocking a PC off. So that's about all I can say. All
right,
it's shit. That's all I can say.
All right, so let us know what you think about the official ruling of this, and if you actually cared about the FF, because I'm not gonna lie, I like them when they show up, but I've never really have read their book consistently. The only time I read their book consistently was when Mark Millar and Brian Hitch were on the book, and then a little bit with Hickman, but I dropped that about halfway when the story was through. So let us know. All right, so now it's time to unless I'm forgetting any news, Brian. No more news. I don't forget?
Nope. We're all tapped out. All
right. So, for the first time in a while, we are going to be doing co-books of the week, because 3 out of 4 of us read one book, and all of us read the other one, so I figured, fuck it, why not?
Yay!
First up, the hot title that people seem to be talking about will be Superior Iron Man number 1, the newly relaunched Iron Man title, written by Tom Taylor, who you may recognize that name from Earth 2, or a little comic you may have heard of called Injustice, based on the hit video game, which apparently is really fucking good. And here's the thing, before I come, I didn't read the book, sadly. Before I comment, I did not read
the book.
You
say I'm a perv. Jeez.
I did not read this book, but I find it interesting that Tom Taylor has now, in my mind, might be a little bit being pegged to writing the dickest superhero. He is writing evil Superman in Injustice. In Earth 2, he wrote an evil Superman. another evil Superman, and now he's writing Dick is Tony Stark. So I just find it a really funny, a little bit, that he's writing, that this is kind of what he's been doing.
In his defense, though, Injustice, Superman isn't a dick.
Oh, he's not a dick?
He's not a dick.
Okay.
He's a man who, on quite a few different occasions, tried to come back from the precipice,
okay,
and shit just kept pushing him forward.
Okay, I
see. But
he's writing.
It is a good book, though. I do recommend it.
Okay. How dare we recommend a book from the Distinguished
Comics? Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Oh, my Lord, somebody stop it. Okay, I'm going to let Taser go first. What did you think of the first issue of Superior Iron Man number one?
Oh, that's not a good sign.
this was basically Tony Stark with few morals, you know? Tony Stark who's out there trying to make a buck by showing people how smart he is, what he can do for the common man, but wanting to get whatever he can get out of it, and him not doing a whole lot to do that, you know? This is Tony Stark just kind of going down to, like, the average, ordinary person's level and pulling their shorts down and grabbing them by the short hairs and looking them right in the eye and going, yeah, and you know you don't want me to let go, you know? Because when you see what he did here, I don't want to, you know, ruin it yet. I'll let whoever goes next after me do it. When you see what he did, it's freaking hilarious. It's diabolical. And when you see the collar, or rather how he curtails it, it makes you smile. I couldn't help but laugh. I kind of woke up my roommate when I did that, because I read it this morning and I was laughing so hard. But I think that looks like it's going to be an interesting twist in how long they get this guy to kind of spin this new dynamic for Tony. I don't know if I'm going to stick around for that ride, because while it's interesting to read, and I kind of tip my hat to him, I like reading books about superheroes. And yeah, this is going to turn into the, okay, we know he's got a problem. How do we go about fixing it and him while taking him down? Because they will have to take down Tony Stark. And this is Tony Stark, on top of which he has a new type of armor that was based on a symbiote that he got some ideas from DNA wise, and it does new stuff, and it's not nano based, it's something else entirely. And he's all silver and shiny like an iPod, or the new Star Wars. I mean, rather Star Trek. It's the new Enterprise. It's shiny. It would highlight shiny. Yay,
Let's
shiny.
Play.
Yeah, lens flare. Thank you. Lens flare. Actually, you know what it kind of looks like? It looks like the old stealth suit without the faceplate, you know?
Yeah.
And then there was that bit at the end, which, again, I won't ruin. I'll let somebody else do that. I thought it was somebody else, and then I kind of got, you know, knocked off my stool and went, oh, that's interesting. Not freaking bad. But unfortunately, it's not – I don't think it's going to be enough to keep me on it, you know. I'll stick with it for, like, you know, the next three, kind of like I did, when this last run started, when the run previous. I stuck with it for a while, but it just didn't kind of do anything. This one has a bit of potential. It's just me getting over my – hesitancy towards reading things that involve decidedly more. This isn't even morally gray. We're talking about a Tony Stark who's, yes, like swinging towards the whole, you know, people are gonna have to get called in and dogpile on Tony Stark. And,
oh yeah, he's swinging all right.
Yeah, I don't want to read that. You know, I like my heroes, but I give them credit for doing this because it really is actually an interesting thing. So I'm kind of stuck in the middle here. I don't want to read it, but it's interesting. You know, I would say that it's worth a pickup. I will definitely say that, and for at least this first issue. I'm going to give it a 4.2 Warriors out of 5. You know, I can't say I'll stick around for the whole run, but this was new and interesting, you know, and I do say pick it up.
All right, let's go to John. What did you think of the first issue of Superior Iron Man number 1?
The hell was that? Okay.
I'm sorry, I was eating ice.
Mute your mic.
Okay. Anyway. I was loving it. I came in just expecting it to be another, you know, version of the Superior thing, like when they did with Superior Spider-Man, only this time with Tony Stark. And luckily, it's nothing like that. You know, I think Tony Stark's going to wind up being worse. I mean, just when you think that they couldn't make a bigger a-hole out of the man, they topped it. And all I can say is I chuckled when he came in the previous armor, the yellow and black armor, and fought the Teen Abomination, and which I thought was a stupid name myself. and he just, She-Hulk, and they're like, well, he's nowhere near as strong as the other, you know, as the other, and he's like, well, how strong is he? Bam! She gets knocked into the wall, strong enough, and he just comes in and starts. You know, we need to talk about names and stuff. You have your self-image, and it just, and then Abomination just clocks the head off of Iron Man. You find out it's a remote suit, and it's like Tony's just like, you think I really want to waste time with a C-grade guy like you? And it just, I was like, ouch. And what makes it funnier is that I just last night finally watched Iron Man Rise of the Technivore, and I thought that was funny, seeing the suit. Yeah, bleep you. You know, how the armor was kind of slowly sloughing onto Tony like that, and I was like having a flashback to that from last night, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be fun. I will say that I like the actual look of it when he has the face mask on, because otherwise I was like, people on the internet were going, oh, that's just a great design, you know, all protection except for a good headshot by somebody. And I was like, but I like seeing the face mask. I like the armor design, and almost, you know, like Taser said, it was like the stealth suit minus a few things. I was kind of reminded of like a Tron look myself, and you know, almost half expected him to pull a disc out and throw it at somebody. But you know,
okay, I could see that actually.
Yeah, you know? And what I thought was funny is how he's like Apple on crack when it comes to that Extremis app. Oh man, but you talk about an incredible dick move. I mean, he took out his junk, had it 10 feet long and was smacking people with it. I mean, and I was like, ouch. And Pepper, just seeing Pepper just looking at him like, oh, you asshole. Something's got to be done. And the ending, I'm not going to spoil it either. But suffice to say, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out. And I'm on for the ride. This is going to be the first Iron Man title since what's his name's run on in the when they rebooted the title when the movie came out, and Matt Fraction, and you know, up until the first 5 or 50 issues that I read of it, and that I might actually sit down and read it monthly, ongoing, at least for the first couple issues, and see how they do it. They've kind of got me hooked. I was pleasantly surprised by it, and I give it a 4.5 out of 5. The art was great, and the writing was awesome. I could not believe they could make Tony Stark even a bigger dick than what they have in the past.
I forgot to mention, the art is by Julius Signar, who was artist on Earth 2 for a while. He was the
You want to try that name again,
Idris,
pal?
Senior? I don't know. He's from.
Idris Senorita?
He's from Turkey.
Idris Elba?
He's from Turkey. I think he's from Turkey. But he's a great artist. He's a great superhero artist.
Turducken?
Okay. He's a great superhero artist.
Stuffing?
Stop making me hungry. He's a great superhero artist, and I'm glad he's getting a shot on a book like Iron Man. Brian, close it out. What did you think? Are you going to make it a perfect row or near perfect photo?
Oh, I loved it. Oh, my God. I mean, Tony Stark's always been, you know, obnoxious, but this is him when he is just totally done even giving a fuck. This is him at his absolute just amoral basis, level that you've seen in some time. I'm not saying it hasn't happened before, but this is basically Tony Stark before any of the, you know, his life-changing experience happened with the suit and that stuff and getting captured. Probably haven't seen him at least this bad since he was hitting the bottle, which obviously he's starting back on now. it was an impressive feat for them to take Tony Stark and still make him charming enough that you can see sort of the old, you know, veneer of Tony. But then at the end, it's just full on, just it rips it. Because, you know, I mean, when he's talking about his new suit and he's talking to Pepper, you sort of see the cracks forming where it's like, okay, clearly something else happened here. Because when he first shows up on the scene to fight She-Hulk and stuff, you figure, oh, it's just Tony being Tony. But then it slowly starts to slip. It's sort of like a slow reveal of just like how much of a bastard he can really be, because the ending is just full on just... I don't know if I want to spoil it since we all kind of agreed not to. But
it leaves you... I'll put it this way. I thought the person that Pepper meets at the end was a certain member of the Illuminati.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. It looked that way.
Yeah, and to find out that it wasn't, but I'm not sure who the hell that was supposed to be. Somebody.
It is somebody.
It would have to be, but it's who? You know,
Can I tell you? It's not really a spoiler. He's been around for a little while now. Type it in the chat. Okay, fine. But suffice to say, the ending really did set up. It set up a lot of stuff. So I'm waiting to see how it'll be picked up next issue. But certainly worth the read.
Because I did not see that.
So
honestly,
it's not Hank McCoy. Okay.
No, it's not. I would have loved it. It was a fun read. And I liked Pepper
from the future.
Fun.
Yeah, I kind of thought. That.
No, I mean not the way they worked it out. But it's a complicated
thing. He's from
thing.
The future. What do you mean?
He's not from the future.
He's from the fucking future.
There's one of
not in the new origin they gave
Wait,
him.
New origin?
Seriously?
Yes.
Yeah.
Huh.
I didn't know
okay.
that.
I always knew he's the freaking.
Go and read the secret origin of Tony Stark, motherfucker.
What, the one from Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes.
Ew.
Oh, yeah. I did
well,
thank
your SOL on the, answers.
So there's two versions of him now, huh?
As far as we know, it's the only version. The only one of him we've
Brian,
seen.
Until the
over,
next, you know,
the only
Marvel
other
movie.
Version
Marvel
of him
Marvel?
We've seen has been in Uncanny Avengers.
Yes, the future
with,
one.
It's not that anymore. It's in Elseworlds now, as far as I know. Well, not in Elseworlds.
It's
that's
it's another reality. Okay.
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Which is still Elseworlds.
Yeah. Pepper poking fun at Tony about the symbiote infused armor and how that couldn't possibly end badly was just funny as hell. And I liked the pop up of Daredevil and the fact that he'll be sticking around now for a little bit because apparently
he's in San Francisco.
He's teased. He's teased in the next issue as well as him confronting Tony Stark, but we'll see how that turns out for him.
Spoilers. It doesn't go well.
Yeah, you can only assume that, but let me say, the turn with, I will say, because if you read Naxxus, you know, the turn with Extremis has been a hell of a thing, so I'm looking forward to the next issue, so I give it, I'll go to 4 out of 5, solid score.
So I feel like I should be reading this, I might, there's too many good books right now, and I can't afford them all, maybe I'll check out the trade, because like I said, I like this idea, but I don't know if I want to stay for the long haul, so I may just trade weight this one and just read it as read the collection when it comes out. We'll see. Okay, so there you go. Iron Man, Superior Iron Man number one seems to be a success with these guys. Probably with me if I read it, but what can you do? So let's move on to our second book of the week, which it's time to get lawyered up in this bitch. She-Hulk number 10. This is the, in fact, this will be enough. This will be the first time as a book of the week where we've done a conclusion of a story arc as a book of the week versus the beginning of something. So to sum it all up, Cap's on trial because he's basically in a wrongful death lawsuit. And the previous issue, we learned that how he was involved. And so here we are in this issue. And with Jen Walters being frustrated that Cap is why I would suck to be Captain America's lawyer because he's the ultimate good guy. So this issue, we sort of see things from Steve is on the witness stand, and we see things from Steve Rogers' perspective. And in fact, what was said in the last issue wasn't the whole truth at all. It was like, huh? And it turns out this whole state of events involves a member of the a Nazi. With Steve Rogers sort of making, at least how it's presented here, his first official confrontation towards something that's evil, like legitimately evil and not just a bully. And it seems like, well, why wasn't it said? Why didn't this guy say this? Because, I mean, obviously they were both there. And it turns out, well, it was classified. And because the United States government or the FBI did not want it known that Nazis were actually on American soil, kind of makes sense that they want to keep it hush-hush. So there's that. And, of course, Patsy Hellcat comes along with her her hilarious one-liners. I love Patsy. If there's going to be one thing I miss about this book, it's Patsy.
She is the most goddamn irresponsible person to have trusted this shit with, and yet Jen trusts her implicitly, which I find hilarious.
So a lot of lingo, Marvin jargon, and in fact, it's implied here that this sort of event causes Steve, because he's being talked to by an FBI agent, we could use you in a uniform, and of course Steve's saying he's 4F, we know the story. And Steve kind of hints that, well, you know, I'm not sure it possibly was, you know, what led me to try to sign up, or potentially led me to Project Rebirth, you know, to prove that I can still, you know, despite my frame. And then we get a double page spread full of text of both Matt Murdock and She-Hulk giving their cases. And as
it's just lawyer jargon.
As a person who's a lawyer freak like me, despite that I can't get the terms right, I love this. I read every single inch, and I kept thinking, ooh, this would be great for a Marvel TV. and just like hearing the arguments and like, well, I could believe that. And so ultimately, they found what did they find Captain America?
They found him innocent by a jury of his peers.
Yeah, and it turns out it was
as if they would find him guilty.
And it turns out it was behind the fault of a villain. And literally in the last page, the last two panels, they go in and kick his henchman's ass, and then Steve delivers the final blow. So it ends it, ends that issue, and it opens up with Titana, I believe. Is that her? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I can only assume.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. Who was married to the Hulk at one point, right?
Amazing Absorbing Man.
Okay, I'm thinking of somebody else.
Right. Yeah,
I was thinking of somebody else. Shows up. So yeah, I was really entertained with this issue. I loved it. I loved it from start to finish. I didn't know who that. I loved it from start to finish. I love the art. I love the fact that that a book like this, at least for now, exists. I love that we got to see an event on what may have caused Steve Rogers to try to join the army, which, you know, everybody has that moment where they decided, oh, I know what I need to do with the rest of my life. I thought it was well done. I think like the FBI stuff may have been a little bit like, well, you see, it was classified, a little pulling out of the ass, but I still thought it was an overall entertaining story. So I give it a 4 out of 5. It was really good. I'm gonna miss this book specifically. Patsy Hellcat is what I'm gonna miss about this book. Just so much irresponsibility in that woman. Brian, what did you think of this issue?
I've been enjoying She-Hulk from the jump, so I got a kick out of this. When they brought Matt Murdock in to face off against She-Hulk in a court case, I thought it was just the greatest thing to happen to this book. I have always sort of bemoaned the fact that they never really came together much more, considering the fact that they're both lawyers and they both practiced in New York for a while. So I was happy to see them get some time together, and I love the characters themselves. And I love how, at the end, too, he kind of throws a jab at Murdoch, Steve Rogers does. You know, Steve said he needed someone on the other side of the court who could believe he could possibly have done this, someone who believes there's a darkness in everybody, and Matt definitely has that. And then he says, and you picked She-Hulk because I picked Jen because I wanted to win. And I'm just like, oh, you old bastard.
And she had that big old cheese-eating grin at that point. That was
yeah,
funny, too.
So she's like, Captain America likes me better than you. Yeah. but I thought it was great, and I'm really going to miss the Matt Murdock and S.H.I.E.L.D. being opposed to each other in court. I would have loved it. I could eat up a whole series of just that. Just a legal drama around S.H.I.E.L.D. and Daredevil just facing each other down in court would be just my dream to see. But I'll say this. You can tell Sewell is an attorney by the way he writes his closing statements because, god damn, the man is eloquent, if nothing else. I mean, he knows how to craft a statement that sums up pretty damn well. I will say that, yeah, the whole confidentiality thing was a bit kind of far-fetched. What was more far-fetched for me was the whole, at the end, which was nice, but it was still them busting down the door of this mastermind who's apparently trying to tarnish Steve's legacy. And I like how he goes, it's just the opening salvo, you'll never be rid of me. It's like, dude, we're never going to see you again. You're done after this. And the whole thing with them just busting down the door and Steve allegedly like whipping him with his cane or punching him or something. Yeah,
he pulled an old man Bruce.
Yeah, you know though, I'm not sure I can buy that, but that's a very small gripe in an otherwise very enjoyable issue. I really loved it. And I'm gonna be sad to see this book go. I'm sad to see She-Hulk leave San Francisco, but it was a great arc. I loved it, and I love to see Matt and She-Hulk in the same room. I hope it happens again sometime soon. If not in She-Hulk, then in Daredevil. Because lawyers are meant to argue with each other, so give us more of that, please. But great issue wise.
This is going to be a side tangent, and by any means, please don't jump on this. Maybe we'll get a Jennifer Walters reference in Daredevil. Hmm?
God, I hope so.
Yay! Hmm?
She's a lawyer.
Okay, John, what did you think of She-Hulk number 10?
Yeah, I'll be honest. I just finally was able to upload it because my comic book store was sold out of the issue. Mainly because they it's obviously not one of the bigger sellers, but what copies they had was not there, and I was having to find other means to read it, and I didn't complete it all the way through, but I did enjoy what I saw. I mean, I would love to see it, like you said, I would love to see Matt Murdock and Jennifer Walters, you know, go at it again. I would like to see more court, you know, more of the court side of stuff, you know, in the Marvel Universe, because it's a side that we don't see, and it would be interesting to see how they can do it. And it can be an entertaining, you know, read, you know, if you get the right guy. And Sewell seems to be the guy to do it. I wasn't a big fan of the art, but that's just me. I don't know, it just kind of threw me off. I liked loved how you said how Hellcat was. If she was anything like this in the rest of the series, I've missed a cool version of the character. I've always been a big fan of Hellcat from back in the Defenders days, and it's nice to see her in any way, shape, or form, especially her shape. But anyway, I'm going to go ahead and give it since it was a cold read for me. I didn't read the title outside of the first issue that we did as a book of the week quite a while back. I'll give it a 3.5 just on the strength of the writing alone. And I will say that I'm not going to be heartbroken to see it go, because it just seems like She-Hulk just never has a good track record with, you know, keeping a title going. And this iteration might have been a good chance to get, you know, into the other side of the character instead of just her being Hulk Smash or whatever. Get to see the lawyer, you know, the attorney side. And so, when it comes out in trade, I will definitely pick it up. So that's all I can say about it.
All right, last but not least, Grimace, go ahead. I don't know.
Where's my shake?
I don't know why I called you Grimace. I really don't know why.
So he's a purple motherfucker.
Big and dark.
Grimace is purple.
And like milkshakes.
It's a dark color.
I didn't know Grimace. Exactly. Like that. I didn't know you like. Yeah, all I know, dark he could be lactose intolerant for all I know. I don't know.
I am not.
Well, I didn't know that prior to now. All right, go ahead. What did you think of the show episode, Grimace?
Anyway, I thought it was fun and quirky. The biggest problem I would have had with this book would have been naturally that, you know, it's a superhero book and there wasn't a whole lot of superheroing in it. But that's kind of what was the focus of this book was about, you know, She-Hulk and more like a day in the life of She-Hulk rather than She-Hulk and the Adventures of. I thought I didn't read the first part. This part here where Matt Murdock, it starts off with Matt Murdock talking about, hey, well, you know, you just heard him admit that, you know, he was guilty of sin, so I don't imagine I have anything left to really do. Okay. And Jennifer steps up and she's like, Cap, is there anything else you can tell us? And he's like, well, yeah, that wasn't the whole story, not even part of it. And he tells us about him, friend, going to California, finding brothers, it's stupid, and, you know, hail, hi, you know, rather, Sig Hail, and I thought it was odd, though, that 1941, he was, you know, working with some fifth columnists, and we're talking fifth columnists who already had, like, you know, freaking steamed up battle armor and shit like that. I'm like, in 1941? Really? Okay, you know, go with it. You know, don't stop and consider it, you know, how that would really make things look. And, you know, Steve Rogers apparently showing the moral fortitude that led him to become the man that he is. Well, actually, he was a man then, for all intents and purposes, be perfectly honest. But, you know, this is kind of maybe the genesis of why he went and signed up and everything else like that. And being accused of, because he stood up to this Nazi, the Nazi decided that, well, it would be more interesting to shoot the friend. And that's, you know, that's where the problem was, because, you know, apparently the brother got caught, brother got tossed in the clinker. And then when he got out, you know, lived the life, but, you know, maybe what's his name, the evil dink that was behind all of this, caught him and, you know,
Faustus,
on his deathbed.
Dr. Faustus.
Thank you, Dr. Faustus. On his deathbed, somehow forced this guy to, you know, write something nasty about Steve Rogers. I kind of look at this and go, wait a minute, if I'm on my deathbed, the fuck is this guy going to do? You know? Steve kind of reasons it all out, like, you know, well, you know, all this stuff that Matt had access to, all of this stuff would have been hidden. It wasn't part of the public record. So clearly this was part of some type of smear campaign or something like that. So I have to take and, you know, do something to kind of resolve the situation before I have it resolved for me. My problem with his effort to do that is he sends Patsy out to some facility to steal some files, and she spends, a good majority of the time doing so. She comes back. She hands it to Steve, who then kind of gives it to She-Hulk, and the partner there goes, hey, you know what? We can't really use this because it's all classified. And he says as such, it's classified. So she asks him, well, what the hell did you give me this for? So you can use it, even though you can't use it. Do your best. So, like, okay, yeah, whatever. And then when you look at her closing argument, she doesn't really use it. She just kind of gets the jury to recognize that, you know, Steve Rogers is the man that he is, not because of the super soldier serum, but because he is the man that he is. And given the further clarification of the story about the events that happened way back when, you know, can you really hold this man accountable for something that wasn't his fault? So that kind of makes the whole file thing irrelevant. You know, there was absolutely no point to that. The only thing is She-Hulk now knows that she, you know, that this stuff happened. He didn't lie about it, but she can't talk about it. You know, and as if that was going to happen anyway, you know? And it was a fun story, and it resolved nicely, and, you know, seeing Patsy talk about how she wanted to use the stealth suit more often was kind of funny, you know, talking about how she used it to spy on guys who might have been leaving her, which says something for how well her life has been going.
Well, but when your ex-husband is the son of Satan, you know, you kind of gotta...
She's got two ex-husbands.
Ex-husband was the son of Satan. The husband before that was a guy, I think his name was Bulldog.
He became Mad Dog, and he could
give babies to
people. Yeah. Even genetically.
And, but yeah, her marriage to Damien Hellstrom lasted a while, you know, and he was the son of Satan then. But, you know, because it's Marvel and things can't have happy endings, well, let's just fuck with them. But, you know, besides that, you just kind of get the idea that shit hasn't been going well. Well, look when she got introduced. Well, brought into the start, into the book back in, what was it, issue 3? You know, she was getting drunk, you know, because it was fun, you know, and that's all she had to do. Anyway, regardless, I thought that was interesting, her, you know, just kind of, give me more work, give me something to do, please. And I don't know, it's a nice little, it's a slice of life book that I thought, you know, had a pretty decent ending. But it, you know, again, kind of illustrates why I wouldn't read this as a monthly, because, yeah, this isn't what I signed up for. You know, if I'm gonna read a Kate book, I want to see more than like maybe a page or two of some shit getting broken. You know, so good story, well told. Art was decent; it was passable. I didn't have any major problems with it, but not, you know, something for my tastes. I will give this book, I'll give this book a 3.95 Warriors out of 5. Because it was well done, and it was nice. It's just, ultimately, it's not for me, but I do recognize a solid book and, you know, a good read when I see it.
Well then, okay. There you go. There's our co-books of the week. So let us know what you thought about both Superior Iron Man number 1 and The Complete Polar Opposite with She-Hulk number 10. First up on individual reviews, Jonathan with the first chapter of Spider-Verse, Amazing Spider-Man number 9. Take it away, Johnny boy.
God help us on this one, but yeah. You know, this has got more spiders in this than the Clone Saga. We'll just leave it at that. But unlike the Clone Saga, this is actually better. It's actually been entertaining. Starts out with, it says, Peter Parker's patch. He's not up yet. Sleeping. And he's like, wakes up going, huh? Spider phone sense is tingling. He's like, hey, Peter, who's... And you hear J. Jonah Jameson going, Parker! And he's like, what? You better get over there and take some pictures at Armstrong Park and... I want pictures pronto. And he's like, oh, it's just another early morning adventure for your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And he comes up and he's doing his little thing, and then he runs into Moreland, who grabs him and starts, you know, going, always the same question. I'm Moreland, Peter, and we've done this 1,000 times on 1,000 Earths. What are you talking about? We're not on Earth. We're not. Why do I bother explaining? Snaps his neck, you know, and... When all you ever do is die, it's like, shh, no more talking, time to feed, and starts feeding on them. And then you'll notice that it's Armstrong Park of New Lunar York Park Department. You see Earth up in the sky, and it goes, and that was the Spider-Moon Man of Earth 449. And, you know, goes into the credits, and it's Dan Slott writing, Oliver Coipel as artist, looking really fantastic on in this issue too. And then it goes back to Loom World, where I guess the entire family that's been hunting down everybody, you know, hunting everybody down, they're feeding on them, and it's Earth-001, and They're all talking, and then they're like, okay, do we get... Go ahead and fetch my hounds. And you see alternate versions of Sable, Kraven the Hunter, and a guy named Fireheart. I guess it's as Puma. Then they're all hounds to track down the various spiders. And Moreland tells a brother of his to stay away from Earth 616 because that's his ground, and so his brother's deciding to go ahead and go there. And I guess because this was the one Earth where Moreland died is why he's scared to pop up there. And, of course, 616 has to be the main Earth that you know, they probably won't be able to do anything to. And then the next scene you see Peter Parker's apartment, Earth 616. Yes, this is our Peter Parker. Stop looking at his butt because he's in bed and the blanket's halfway off of him. And he's like, whoa, wait a minute, something senses tingling. And Silk pops up and, you know, saying hello, hanging upside down on his wall. And they go, what are you doing here? And he's like, why didn't you set off? Oh, that's right, you don't set off my spider sense. And apparently they get to where they can't stay together too much because according to this, it says whenever they're together, their animal urges kick into overdrive. And how do I put this delicately? We both feel the urge to mate, like spider bunnies. And they're talking, and they make a kind of a joke about how she says, you might as well go out of New York, and I'll take care of the spider routine. You can go somewhere else, maybe even off-world. How about the moon? He's like, okay, that's silly. But then he tells them to go outside, and they're swinging, and they're talking. And then they see this a spider tank doing a robbery, and he's like, and Silk is like, you have a tank? And he's like, it's not mine. And they're going all that, and they had swiped stuff from Spider Island from all that, and I was like, the wall crawler? He knew this would happen. He wants his stuff back. And Spider's like, that's not my stuff. Doc Ock was pretending to be me. And she's like, stop. This sounds all way too complicated. Let's just, and they start kicking the crap out of everybody. And then you see Spider-Woman and Anya Corazon, the Spider-Girl. And then Spider-Man, you know, Miguel O'Hara pops up. And they're like, Peter's like, what the heck is this, a spider convention? And while the robbers are like, five of them? They're everywhere. And he's like, forget this, I'm out. And you're running, and all of a sudden you see the Billy Braddock, Spider UK of Earth 833. He's a member of the Captain Britain Corps. He's like, you there, stop mucking about. He's like, how many of you are there? And then we see Mayday Parker, Spider Girl. And she's like, quit playing with him. There's work to do. And he's like, fine, Peter, will you do the honors, mate? And you hear her voice go, you got it. And the guy's like, what? Down here. And all of a sudden, bam, one pig knuckle sandwich coming up. And Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham of Earth 25, foreseen and proud, knocks the crap out of him. And Peter's like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, what is this? And it's like, time out. Future me. British me. And one that's a cartoon pig, and Peter Porker's like, yeah, I want to make something of it. He's like, wait, like what, a luau? And Captain Britain is basically saying, Spider-Man, I can explain. We're of other dimensions, and they're going through all this. And then Peter's still not, you know, convinced. He's thinking this might be he's like, nope, not falling for it. You had me up until Downton Webby and the spider pig. But I know what this is. It's Mysterio, isn't it, trying to make me look like an idiot. And Mayday goes, stop. And she's like, shows him her face. And he's like, they need, you know, we need you. You're important. And they said, well, you faced one before, Moreland. And he's like, Moreland? But he's dead, isn't he? And they're like, no, wait a minute. He's like, Moreland's coming here. And he's like, no, Deimos, Moreland's bigger brother. He's like, he has a bigger brother. And they go through this portal that goes to a different Earth. And then it flashes over to Mount Wondergore, Eastern Europe. And with the home of the New Warriors, or what's left of them, all the New Warriors are pretty much laying all over the place, crap kicked out of them. And you see Kane Parker, the Scarlet Spider, just about to be fed off, you know, being killed and fed on by Mortal. And he's like, huh, Pain, interesting. You're not just like any old spider. You're the other. And he's like, no wonder my brother was saving this world, selfish pig. And the guy says, and you're like, okay, whatever. And then all of a sudden, before he can kill him or feed off of him, you see Bruce Banner, the Spider-Man of Earth 7, whatever 5, you know, not a Hulk. Old Man Spider of Earth 4, his identity hidden for now. And then you see everybody's favorite new Spider character, Gwen Stacy, Spider-Woman of Earth 65, and it even says your new favorite as an in-joke from the whole deal. And then all of a sudden she's like, then all of a sudden you see Ben Reilly, Spider-Man of Earth 94, cloned from his world's Peter Parker. And they bug out and Bruce gets killed by Morlun. And then they come to Earth 13. It's called the Spider Refuge, also called the Safe Zone. And they're all, you see all these, I mean, shit ton different versions of Spider-Man and Spider-Woman. And it says, well, we're safe for now. And he's like, wait a minute, how can? And then Peter's like, I can't process any of this. How can we be that? And then you see Cosmic Spider-Man of Earth 13. And it's Peter Parker, if he hadn't lost, you know, hadn't given up the Captain Universe powers. And while he stays on that Earth, the family can't touch him, and because he's too powerful. And he gives back Mayday a little baby. I'm going to assume that's going to be like her little brother or something. But I never was able to finish reading Spider-Girl, the title. And then it goes to Earth 610, where we see Miles Morales looking at a grave, you know, and all that, and talking to Jessica Drew, the female clone of the world, Spider-Girl. And the woman who had the hounds is, the hunt is over far too quickly. And also, it's so much better when you run. And you see the hounds getting ready to attack Miles and Spider-Girl of that Earth, and it's to be continued. Then it goes into the Loom world, talking to shows the family, and they're talking. And then you see this guy called the Weaver, and you see all the various different realities of all the different versions of Spider-Man. There's even a Spider Cowboy. There's a Deadpool Spider-Man. There's a Spider-Man Human Torch. It's funny. You see all these in-jokes. You even see a Spider-Man from the old 60s cartoon swinging by. And it just, you know, it's just kind of funny. And this guy brings in this other version of Spider-Man, plops him on the table and says, by the way, it's time to eat. And this hidden face, which is the father of the bunch, they're talking about the gathering, and he's like, the father's like, I have known the location of the other for some time, and that of the bride, and even the scion. And he's like, and they're all getting ready to feed, and Spider-Man tries to say, you know, you're just thieves, you will not win, and blah, blah, blah. And at the end of it, they're like, okay, eat my children, devour them all, and they like, can, you know, attack and start feeding off on Spidey like, you know, mad, you know, like a, you know, a dog pack that's hungry and going after an antelope type thing. I will say this. This is going to be this was an interesting issue. I was kind of about the whole Spider-Verse thing when I first heard about it and saw some of the side titles they did. Well, I'm going to say that I'm going to be kind of keeping up with this because I think it's going to, you know, this is going to be one of those kind of crossovers that's one of the crossovers done right. And it's not necessarily an event per se. It's just something to sit back, relax, and watch all your various different versions of Spider-Man. And you get to see all the various different versions get to meet each other finally. And they're going to be in a, you know, a situation where they have to team up because otherwise all the versions are going to die. And I'm looking forward to seeing our current version of Spider-Man, seeing his Doc Ock-possessed body. And it's going to be the Amazing versus the Superior in a couple of issues. I give this issue a 4.5 for the writing. Dan Slott actually hit it out of the park. He's not as gratuitously cheesy as he has been in the past. And Oliver Copiel's art is excellent as always. And he's going to be sticking on Spider-Man. I'll keeping on a long haul on this. I'm going to keep an eye on this series, and I recommend it for anybody else. You know, as long as you don't mind there being multiple Spider-Men, as long as you know it's not clones, I think you'll be good.
All right, thank you, John. All right. So speaking of beginning of some things, I'll be reviewing all new Captain America number one. This is the new official title now that Steve Rogers is obviously General Geriatric, and Sam Wilson has taken up the mantle, resulting in a number one, still written by Rick Remender, this time art by Stuart Immonen. Who has left all new X-Men for this. And you know how a lot of issues do a lot of setup in the first issue? Like, Thor number one was a lot of setup, a lot of establishing everything. Here, you get a couple pages of a little bit of backstory on why Sam Wilson, you know, sort of why he has a certain mindset. And not even wasting any time after that, sets a beautiful double-page spread by by Immonen, in which Sam Wilson is on his first, seemingly for not his first mission, as Captain America, infiltrating a Hydra base, full of kinetic energy, full of action, even references to like the old shady how Hydra base is the final age, and so and it looks like Sam is an insider in the Hydra base, and it's actually Nomad. It's Nomad, the son, or what's his name? Ian, the adopted son of Captain America, and it looks like he's actually Remender is setting up some animosity between the two, because it looks like in a bit of a character twist, Ian is a little bit jealous that Steve didn't choose him to be Cap, and it turns out that Batroc the Leaper, in a slightly in a seemingly new costume, is in charge of all this, and in a way, sadly, he turns into cannon fodder. Not by Sam. Sam kind of gets messed up by him, but Nomad basically kicks him into the uses his little baton thing to knock him into the lava, sort of showing how extreme he's willing to go, which is a little, coming from the harsh reality he's from, I'm not surprised. But irregardless, they keep going, the action keeps moving, the pace doesn't let up. Finally leads to Nomad and Captain America stumbling into a cabal, which involves Baron Zemo, funny enough, who we were talking about. Brian, I'm assuming, is that Sin?
That's what I've been led to believe.
It looks like
it's
not Red Skull.
As far as I know, Red Skull is elsewhere. Yeah. I mean, granted, this is a little bit outside of the whole Axis thing, but for the most part, Red Skull was elsewhere. So I'm assuming that's Sin.
So that's Sin, one of the members of the Serpent Society, Taskmaster, Crossbones sitting with his automatic. And I don't know who those two characters on the right. There's a bat-like person, not Batman, and then there's a stone creature.
Are you sure it's not Batman? Because I'm pretty sure Batman.
Batman doesn't have goofy ears, and he doesn't pop his collar like that. So needless to say, and Viper. I forgot. Is that Viper? Right? It's Viper.
I believe so. Yes. Viper, Crossbones, Taskmaster, all that.
Yeah. So Sam has seemingly stumbled into a cabal of villains led by Captain America, villains led by
the Masters of Evil. Possibly.
I love this issue. This issue was wasting zero time. Like, okay, Sam Wilson's Captain America, and go. It was very fast, very kinetic, very fun. I recommend this issue a lot. If you may be a little bit out of the loop on who Sam is. I mean, not Sam, Ian is, but the dialogue in there gives you enough context, and the recap gives you enough context on who he is. You just won't have any personal connection with him, but hopefully that'll develop along with the series as the series progresses. But yeah, this is great. I didn't expect. I knew I was gonna like this, but I love this issue. And I hope Stuart Immonen stays on this book for a while. It looks gorgeous, and I can't wait to see. And Sam is such a different character as Cap, and I did find, if I have anything negative to say about it, I did find that him repeating the "I can't believe I've never had a shield before" got a little old. I felt that, but other than that, I thought that it was a very, very solid issue. 4 out of 5 for me. All new Captain America number one. If you don't want the dickish superhero in Tony Stark, you have the noble Sam Wilson as Captain America, with a little heated rivalry seemingly starting with Ian, Cap's adopted son. I did like that Cap had to basically – and there's also a little sequence where Cap is fishing, seeming like acting in camouflage, and he has to relax, like, I can't do anything. And like Sharon's like, just relax, they got this. They got this. So there you go. All new Captain America number one. So let's go up next to Brian with Axis number five. Shit just gets crazier.
Yeah. Shit just keeps on rolling downhill. So we start at Avengers Tower. Spidey meets up with the new Nova, and they've both been called to an Avengers Priority Alert meeting. Spidey's kind of giving the kid a hard time, kind of, you know, hazing him a little bit, as he'll go on to say. You know, just part of the new deal with the new Avengers and stuff. And as you walk into the room, it's really a who's who of Avengers material. You got She-Hulk in there, Valkyrie, Black Widow, Spider-Woman, Black Panther, Cannonball, you know, all of these people, all in one location. And you get Spidey kind of riffing on Hawkeye a little bit, which is nice. You get a debate of mutants and humans between the Vision and McCoy. And Sue Storm is understandably upset at everything because, hey, I think this is still during the period when her kids are taken from her. So if that's the case, I understand why she'd be upset. Anywho, a different group of Avengers arrives and informs them as to the purpose of the meeting. It's Falcon, Cap, Sam Wilson, with Scarlet Witch, Luke Cage, Medusa, Thor, you know, that group. Note that Janet Van Dyne is noticeably absent from this group, although she was among those on the island who were inverted. So, with that being said, Captain America welcomes them and tells them that Red Skull has escaped, and it took an Avengers Priority clearance to do it. With that logic, he assumes that one of them helped the Skull escape, and as he just doesn't have the time to be bothered with it, he doesn't really have the motivation to try and figure out who's going to, who's responsible. He just decides the quickest solution is to shrink them all down using Pym particles and trap them in Henry Pym's Pym particle ant farm and store them away. Doesn't kill him, but it takes him out of play for a good long while, so Spidey, being Spidey, gets a Spidey sense that something's going wrong, so he pushes Nova out a window and the two fall to their freedom, so to speak. They're quickly recaptured by Medusa, but then Spidey gets his web in her hair, makes a joke about peanut butter needed to get it out, and him and Nova are off, fleeing the scene. Cap, Falcon encloses on them, remarking that only guilty men run. And I love that Sam Wilson pretty much just goes, tell me where you took the Red Skull or I'll snap your damn neck. And Spidey just fires back. You know, literally the least Captain America line of just, you know, dialogue ever. As he's about to capture Spidey, presumably, his shield, which he had thrown to knock Nova out of play, comes back around and hits him in the face, full on. He drops out of the sky like a rock. Scarlet Witch tries arrives on the scene trying to figure out what went wrong, and you see that it was Magneto who has Spidey and Nova hidden away, and he's going to take them to get them away from Scarlet Witch and Cap, Falcon, and all them. Once Cap, Falcon, and Scarlet Witch arrive back in the tower, there's talk of rounding up the X-Men and the Inhumans. And then they remark how Spidey and Nova got away, and Scarlet Witch says she's done with these people. She has other goals to fulfill, other vengeance to seek, magic to pursue. So she's pretty much takes her leave of the group from there on. We show up back at Avengers Mansion, the former home of the new Avengers, where Spidey and Nova are brought into the fold, talking with old Cap, Steve Rogers, as well as Magneto, and Ian, Nomad, Cap's son, so to speak. And there, they're able to put together the basic idea that whoever was on the island when the magics of chaos and order were enacted sort of reverted their alignment from good to bad, bad to good. And so that leads them to realize that every good guy that was on the island during that time is now a bad guy, and every bad guy is now a good guy, presumably. That includes Magneto, who says as much. They get a news report of Kluh, the Hulk's Hulk, ripping up Arizona, and Nova bursts off to take care of him, or try to anyway. That's a setup for a tying issue. That's actually
issue I didn't like. It was like obvious. Like, well, I have to go.
Yeah,
it has to. I didn't read that issue. An event, but still, it's like, ugh.
I didn't read that issue either. As they're watching Nova about to engage Kle, new alert sounds, a proximity alert. They all go outside to see what it is, and wouldn't you know it, it's fucking Apocalypse closing in on Avengers Mansion from one of his big-ass towers and whatnot. We cut back to inside the mansion where Sam, in full-on just bad guy monologuing motif, pours himself a glass of some sort of alcoholic beverage and monologues to Janet Van Dyne, who is being held against her will and being drained of all the PIM particles necessary to shrink everybody down, who gets in Sam Wilson's way. He pretty much says that this is the first move in their, you know, their sort of idea of how to reshape the world. You know, politicians, officials, that sort of thing. Anybody who has failed democracy is going to be taken out of play by Sam Wilson. And if there's got to be a dictator, who better than I? And that was rhetorical, or so says Cyclops, because the X-Men come marching in. Cyclops, Nightcrawler, Sunfire, Rogue, Storm, Havoc. They all burst into the scene and pretty much, you know, they show up to Cap's place and sort of embarrass him on his turf. Havoc's the first to fire a shot, given the fact that he still loves Janet, and he just knocks Cap pretty much through a wall. Cap goes to fling his shield at him. Nightcrawler poofs the shield away, bamps it away someplace else. He also realizes that the Red Skull has gone missing, which is what the X-Men originally showed up for, but now they have a different goal in mind. And that goal is to pretty much just give Sam an eviction notice. Because here he comes, whoa, whoa, here he comes, Big Daddy Apocalypse striding onto the scene, and he tells Sam, you know, you will deliver a message to your flock. Tell the human filth they have 3 hours to vacate my island. Manhattan is the first prize of the mutant uprising. And when Sam asks why, Apocalypse says, because it is important to you. And we are going to take away everything you ever cared about. The rightful heirs of this world have come for what is owed. New York is ours. Any human found here in 3 hours will be slaughtered. Tell them, good captain. Tell them all the apocalypse is upon you.
Damn.
That closes out Axis number 5. Holy shit! The X-Men ain't playing around this time. And if I do say so, I mean, he handed Sam Wilson his ass like a punk. Like, seriously. The whole thing with Avengers being duped into that is kind of, I don't want to say head-scratching, but the idea that every single Avenger necessary could get together at the exact same moment in time, I don't necessarily buy that. But that's a nitpick. That's not really a problem with the issue. The issue itself is actually pretty entertaining, just seeing how far the Avengers group has fallen from being actual heroes and such. And the idea that now old Cap is working with Magneto and Nomad, and Nova, hopefully, if he survives the experience of taking on Kle. But the real big gut punch of this issue was Apocalypse showing up on the scene and pretty much saying, yeah, you're done. You guys, get off my island. And just hands Sam Wilson his ass on a silver platter. It was something else. It was great. It really makes you realize the scale of what's happening here. You have the team of Earth's Mightiest Heroes, so to speak, all quarreling among each other, because you do see a bit of that infighting earlier in the
Janice's
issue.
What's Janice's real name again? I can't remember.
Evan.
What happened to Evan?
Evan got that inversion
wave,
man.
I don't like
man.
This. It's like seeing your younger sibling.
He's big and bad and scary.
It's like seeing your younger brother who you remember all nice and cool, nice and funny and carefree and everything, and then like he grows up and you're an asshole, except you're a murderer.
Dude, I want to know what the fuck Phantom X is doing. I want to see him burst into the room being like, what did you do to my boy?
Exactly.
What did you do?
If there's anything, like, yeah. I feel like even if like new readers won't care, like, who cares? Like, just to come on. Like Phantom X deserves to know.
It was just, it was an experience.
Oh my God.
I mean, the Avengers themselves are,
to me personally, about this whole thing is seeing Evan become what he didn't want to become.
He's finally become that thing that nobody wanted him to become.
And it's not his fault, but it's just like, I feel like that's being downplayed because of the event, because there's bigger things at work, but it's like...
Yeah, I mean, that was a huge thing, because the whole thing about him being Apocalypse has been built up since Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah.
So to just sort of see that happen and then just kind of be like, oh, it's just part of the enrichment. It's like, no, you give some time to that, man. Come on.
Who knows? But hopefully he'll get reverted back, and I don't know. Like, it's just so weird to see Evan as Apocalypse.
Yeah, it was really just startling to see that. But I will say that
Deadpool. I mean, they referenced like Deadpool met with him in the first three issues, but I'm surprised Deadpool isn't around. Maybe he doesn't know yet or something. Who knows?
Maybe
Deadpool was all uncle-ish to him towards the end of Uncanny X-Force too. So
yeah, I mean, he's on the cover of the issue. I know it doesn't often mean much, but even still, I'm waiting to see how he plays into this. I hope he does.
Same
but,
here. All right.
Yeah, things are starting to heat up a little bit.
All right, thanks for that review, Brian. All right, and with that, ladies and gentlemen, we will conclude this little episode of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast. Thank you for listening. First and foremost, plugs before we go officially. GreenLanternCorps.com, usually every Wednesday, if not into that weekend, you can check out my review of the latest Green Lantern issue or Multiversity or Earth 2 specifically, or Two Worlds End, the new weekly event from DC. Also, please visit marvelousiggy.wordpress.com, where last week you can check out Dragon's review of Dragon Age Awakening, I believe. It's Dragon Age Awakening, the official review on that. And I uploaded my review on Hyrule Warriors, the exclusive game for the Nintendo Wii U. And then this Friday for Marvelous Iggy, you can expect something Pokemon related in the celebration of the latest release of Pokemon Omega Ruby and Alpha Sapphire. Please check that out. Something very fun that me and Dragon are having fun working on. And this Wednesday, Dragon's review for the much controversial Dragon Age 2 will be coming out. So check that out on Wednesday. And that's all I have for me. Brian, you have anything to say before we go?
Not really, no. I'm just kind of, you know, skulking around the interwebs and whatnot. I'm guessing you mentioned something about the boards. I'm kind of tuned out during the plugs.
All right. Well, yeah. If that's the case, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you all next week for episode number 187. Hope everybody's having a happy holiday. Stay great, stay beautiful, stay wonderful. Have a good week.
Ferguson!
Attica! Attic!
No, Gattaca! Gattaca!
That movie was awful.
What, Gattaca?
Yes.
Get the fuck out of here. That's my favorite movie.
Thank you. I live in
New York.
That's your favorite movie? You have a problem.
It's not my favorite movie. It's not my favorite movie. It is a cult.
You're committed now. You can't back out of it.
No, I'm not committed. Man of Steel is my favorite movie.
Oh,
dear God, dude.
That's even worse.
Why don't you just admit it, say Captain America 1990 film
is your
favorite?
I've never seen it, so I can't say it. I do
really
like
Yeah, he likes
like
the
Gattaca.
Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie, John.
Well, hold on. That movie was better than the
I found
the
it on YouTube.
One.
Fuck okay. You. That movie was good, okay? I don't
all
care.
All right.
That had Reed Richards, who built the space station to study the effects of cosmic rays on planets.
Okay.
Fucking
but it had Michael Chiklis as
Chiklis
the
thing.
So it gets a pass. It gets a pass.
Those two do not save that movie from suckage.
Chris Evans and Michael Chiklis do more than enough to keep that movie from really tanking anyway. I mean,
that's
it's still
true.
Bad. I mean,
that's
it's
true, but comparatively, Roger Corman's Fantastic Four movie was better than that.
No. That movie was better.
Right.
I don't care what you say.
Come on. Brian, zip it. Put it away. All right. Three. I may include that at the end for lulz, so we'll see. We'll see how I feel. Three, two, one.